Angus at Work, a podcast for the profit-minded cattleman. Brought to you by the Angus Beef Bulletin, we have news and information on health, nutrition, marketing, genetics, and management. So, let's get to work, shall we? Hello, and welcome back to Angus at Work. From land prices to input costs and more, there are several barriers to young producers who are either stepping into a new role within a family operation or attempting to enter the cattle business for the very first time. What they may not realize is that there is an advocate for the livestock marketing industry providing a voice on state and federal legislative and regulatory issues in an effort to support producers as a whole. I'm Lindsay McAnally, and on today's episode, you'll hear more from Shauna Hermel and our guest, Mark Barnett, about the Livestock Marketing Association, its mission, and how the LMA's efforts help ensure that no matter where a producer is located, they can sell their livestock for a fair market value. So let's dive in. Welcome to the Angus at Work podcast. I'm here today talking with Mark Barnett with the Livestock Marketing Association.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
Just fine.
Awesome. We're at the National Cattlemen's Convention, and you are unrolling a new rancher resilience type program. Can you explain a little bit?
Yes, producer profitability is sort of the way we're headed with it. Over the past few years, as we've gotten together in our meetings, it's come to our attention that this is a problem that all areas are having with not keeping our young people in our business. And as we got to talking more and more about that, you know, our ways for them to make a living, a consistent living, seems to be a problem. And we've become concerned and said, you know, those are our next generation, the future of our business, are those producers that we're losing and dispersing the herds out for their fathers and grandfathers. And so we become concerned, and wanted to start a conversation in our industry about how we could slow that, or is there anything we can do, or what can we promote to help keep those young people interested in doing what we do.
And what are you identifying as part of those incentives?
Well, we're still in the process right now, but the estate tax, the taxes on the farms and ranches, that as we lose those generations, keeping it where those can keep that farm, not have to sell part of it to try to pay those. We really think it should be eliminated for agricultural use land, but at least be able to keep the exemptions and the level that we have right now. And I think in 2025 it's supposed to sunset back, and that would really affect a lot of farms and ranches that are in agriculture if it goes back to those levels. So that's one of the things. How do we put some people together? You know, we know that there's areas of the country that the land has, its value has stepped past agriculture. And how do we slow that? How do we compete with the grain farmer and the commercial person that's developing the land? It's going to be real hard to with cattle at the level that we're supported right now. But we've got, you know, thanks, there are probably things that we could do in some of these programs that would make it more incentivized, the forage production, cattle production, than just seem like those programs are leaning more towards the grain farm. They've worked at it harder and longer than we have, and we're behind. And it's hard to catch up real fast, but we need to start looking at ways that we can sort of hold on to what we have and not keep giving up those areas that we have. So, you know, those are just some of the things, and we think there's ideas still out there. We're just hoping the conversations we start now will we'll find out what those are, and we'll get new ideas and build off those and keep our industry working towards that, because the next generation is the future of our business. And if we don't find a way to keep them involved and keep them interested and keep them where they can make a living.
Profitability is one of the things that you've identified as a major key point. How have you come to that conclusion?
We had some, back when this first came up, we had listening sessions around our country and sat down and had asked people, not just our markets, our markets invited producers to come and discuss and what problems were. And, you know, the first thing that came up was our labor. Farms and ranches in the times in past always sort of raised their labor, you know. We had siblings that came along and worked the farm and stayed on the farm or the ranch. And there's some of that today, but there's more that I think are finding the jobs off the farm and off the ranch because of that consistent profitability that's maybe not there, and they marry a young lady or a young man that's not from that way of life. They're probably not going to understand it to the point that that we do, that are raised there. So, you know, we've lost some of that labor force, and as we've lost that grown labor, homegrown labor, here we are trying to find other labor, and that's a problem. Those hourly, the H-2A problem that we've sort of, we use those in our operation at home, in our tobacco business. They're not really, it's not really set up for the livestock business right now, those H-2A programs. So, you know, tweaks to that, where labor would come more available, but the cost of that labor goes up every year. That labor is going to be over $15 an hour guaranteed to those H-2A laborers as we come up this next year. And, you know, it just a way for those young people to make a consistent, more consistent living would, I think, keep them closer to that farm because it's hard work. You know, if you weren't raised in it, you're probably not going to like it. And it's sure not going to like it if you don't get paid to do it. And I think that's just become evident as we've lost those young people's interest and don't seem to have them that we used to see coming up. I've been in the livestock marketing business for over 40 years. And I saw when I got in those grandkids and kids with their fathers and grandfathers. Today I'm seeing their parents and their grandparents, and I'm not seeing the young ones with them. And they've taken jobs elsewhere. And as those age to the 70s, they're selling out. And no one's there to pick this job up. If we're going to keep this business and keep this food security, it ties right back to there. We've always had an abundant food source, never been a problem. Go to the store and get it. If you talk to some of our politicians, they think that's where it's raised, I think. But we have to do that. And I think it's concerning to us as if you're in this business, you see that we're probably losing ground. Mm-hmm. But we still have such an abundant and actually a cheap source of food compared to other countries that we take it for granted. And there will be a day that will, if it continues like this, that could change.
Well, livestock markets have always been one of the cornerstone places to go and discuss things within the cattle industry, and always the coffee shop chatter, and there's always a good restaurant in the sale barn, right?
Right, that's right. You know, we offer them an opportunity if they need some cash. There's somewhere, that they can sell something daily, or, you know, most of us have a sale at least once a week, but somewhere there's a place that you can get the fair market value for that animal that day. And I think that's something that we offer this industry that you know, is unique.
Now, for those who wouldn't know much about the Livestock Marketing Association, can you kind of explain what the organization is? And you're president.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. We have 800 plus members between the markets and dealers across our United States. I get set up as a committee structure. We have an exec board, and then we have a committee structure that takes care of the business, and those are, committees are made up of members of those 800 members. Those are where those committee members come from, and they deal with government industry affairs as one of our committees. We have a membership committee. We have a WLAC committee, which is the World Livestock Auctioneers Championship Committee. And those are working committees that discuss the problems that we have in our industry. We're a trade organization for the livestock markets, is what we really are. And we offer some of the services for those markets that they might have a hard time finding outside, the bonds that they have to carry, the insurance that they have to carry, legal services, all those things we offer in-house, and in your membership, and then just ways that we help keep their businesses profitable, help them stay abreast of all the issues that are out there. We have a presence in Washington, D.C., which...
So you can do lobbying for your members?
We have two fly-ins a year, offer our membership time each. So we try to do one in the first part of the week and one in the latter part of the week, so we can, as our sales are all days of the week, we try to give opportunities for others to go. And it's a good way for them to get involved, to understand how hard it is to get some things changed when it's, if you let them get too far out of line, it's hard to get back in line if you don't get your hand up and start getting in there and asking. And we have a very good team that works there in Washington and work for our members. Yeah.
There's been some turnover in some of those barns too.
Yes.
Recently.
Yes.
With some of the same generational change.
That's what we like to see. Mm-hmm. But as we help those next generation step into that role, keep them abreast of any of the changes that are out there, walk them through the what it takes to change. You don't just swap it over. Sometimes there has to be a legal way to do those. We offer that help, and then getting them back bonded and understanding their bank accounts and how you have to do your business is where you can be on the right side of the law.
Right, and, we all want to do that.
That's right. That's right. No, nothing behind. Right. So, but we full service. We call our. We think we have a full service for our industry, livestock markets.
Well, the World Livestock Auctioneering Championship has sure been one of the most visible aspects of LMA.
It promotes us well, our committee does a great job putting that together. We have past champions that serve on it, and people that are in our business that know what it takes to have a good auctioneer and put on an auction. And look forward to being in Oklahoma City this year.
Mm-hmm.
It will be a big turnout. We invite any and all to come. And
that's where the national.
Yes, at the National Stockyard, and that's where our convention will be.
Okay.
And that's where the contest will be this time, at the Oklahoma City Stockyards.
Wonderful. So. Let's back up a little bit. And you mentioned that you had been in the auction market business for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a little bit of your background. And I know you also have a cow-calf herd
right.
as well.
Right. We have lived in that Tennessee, Kentucky, right on that border area for all my life. My grandfather, my father were in... farming, had cattle. I had the opportunity to buy into the livestock market when I was in college. I took that opportunity. I worked there for a little while. We backgrounded a few calves in the wintertime, and so I had gotten to know the people there. And we bought in there, and in 1978, I did, and. I have three sons that that are interested in the farming operation at some point, all involved in all the things that we do, from the cow-calf to we have a row crop deal, we have backgrounding, and then we have livestock markets. So each one has their own expertise, and I just try to stay out of the way now.
So now are you working on a succession plan of your own?
Well, I feel like we do have one, yes. Okay. Yeah. We live in that, I don't know if you're very familiar with the Nashville area. Nashville has really grown.
Yes.
We live in Clarksville, actually, where our farm and where we live. And I guess a couple of years ago, we lived in probably the fastest growing zip code there was in the United States.
Yeah.
That's really not promoting agriculture a lot. We have had a large change from agricultural land to commercial land to, it's been developed. Nashville and Clarksville growing closer together. It's good for if you want to sell out, but it's not good for land for cattle, land for forage, or land for
right.
The, we are losing that ground. But yes, we are, we do have a plan in place. It's just if we can slow some of this development down a little bit, and usually it does change, but we do live in an area that's offers a lot. We have a military base there that's a mainstay, has about 30,000 troops.
Okay.
That joins our city.
Okay.
So that consistent amount of money into our economy. It has a sort of special forces type background there.
Sure.
A lot of those guys retire, and so they buy a house, and then when grandparents, kids, grandkids are living in Clarksville, sometimes we end up with we get families moving to our area.
To your area.
And we've had quite a bit of industry.
Okay.
Move in. So it's just a farm that I farmed 2 years ago, 3 years ago, sold for $40,000 acre.
Oh my.
So that's the kind of...
That takes it out of agriculture.
Agriculture will not compete with that.
Right.
Those families that own those on that land, I don't care how... You may have one that says, I'd sure like to see it stay a farm, but the other three
right.
said, no, we want the money. And so there's houses there for that one.
That's affected you as a cow-calf
sure.
producer. It's affected your clientele.
Right.
As a
affects
cow.
Our business.
Yes.
Because those are businesses as that are having opportunities to disperse their cattle herds and have an opportunity to sell their land at an inflated value that compared to what it can be used for agricultural purposes.
So do you see those people as moving to another area that might be more cow-calf friendly, or do you see those families exiting the business?
Exiting the business. That's what's going on in our area. Yeah. You occasionally hear somebody talking about, well, I should just sell out and move to, and I said, okay, tell me where that place is you can move to.
Yeah.
Now, there are places that the land will still sell high, but what you can sell the land in our area for, you could sell, and probably buy some that would say, well, how in the world did they come here and buy this land and go run cattle on it or farm it? Well, because they sold land at $30,000 or $40,000, you can buy some $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 acre land and make it work.
Yes.
But we've had some of that in our area where people have sold from Nashville and moved our way back when that land was that high and bought some, and that inflated it to that $4,000 to $5,000 to $7,000 acre, and now that land they're selling for $20,000 to $40,000 acre. So it has just stair stepped as our area grows more, and the Kentucky side is probably a little slower, but the Tennessee side has really grown a lot.
Okay. And now you bought the auction market, you said, bought into it when you were...
I was probably, I guess I was 20.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And in the time, we bought the rest of them. We bought a percentage of it, and we just bought it out, and it's pretty much in our family now. And one of the original owners' nephew is still a partner with it. He's the same age I am. We bought it together, and then the rest of it is owned by our family.
Okay.
And we have. It's been very rewarding over the years to see and. You know, it's satisfying to sell those cattle and you get an opportunity to promote that person's business and to sell his calf crop that year. Some of our people don't sell once or twice a year. They may sell multiple times because they're smaller producers. The average cow herd size in our area is probably about 30 head. So they're diversified. They do have a job somewhere else. They're not using the cattle as their only form of income. So we have to, if it gets harder and harder for them, we'll put more regulations on them. It's a lot easier for them to step out of that role than it is to keep them in it because they're probably not their only form of income. Further west you go, and you know, it is your life, it is the life. And I often thought I wished I'd have been born a little bit further west. I would have enjoyed that more, but we do the best we can where we are.
Now, things have certainly changed over the years in the business of what a livestock auction market does. Can you kind of go through some of that and what some of the new initiatives are?
We have to be progressive. Different ways of selling, offer the video sales, that used to just be, you know, just brought them in. We do try, because our producers are smaller, we do a graded feeder calf sale, which is something where you commingle the cattle before the sale. It makes you have to weigh the cattle earlier, but you do get to have larger groups to offer to that buyer of like cattle. And we've done that ever since it was doing it some when I bought it. We just grew it into most all the classes of cattle that we have. You'll have cattle that won't fit, of course, but it does help, and I think it's really made a difference in some of those smaller producers able to sell in cuts of 40 or 50 head because we've commingled them, and our buyers have accepted it, and I think it's really helped that small producer, give him a little bit better. Rather than selling ones or twos at a time, we can sell a larger group, and I think it's helped the prices over the years. And you know, have our special sales for those that have special program cattle that want to do the vaccines, and we try to get those to come in a certain day. We try to have a special sale for those and a wean sale. And a lot of our cattle are sold right off the cow. And that's sort of what the Southeast is known for. And that's what's going to happen when you have those smaller herds that have jobs off the farm or off the ranch. They're going to probably just get their calves up and sell them. And we sell a lot of bull calves that are not steers, so we offer that opportunity for that backgrounder to come in and buy cattle at our sale, and he can take them home and do the upgrade and cut and make steers and grow them into that yearling type deal. And it's cattle out of the Southeast. But we try to be on the front edge of special bred heifer sales and things like that for.
Now, with the cow herd being down, that has limited the number of cattle that traffic through the barns or through the video sales or anyway. Yeah. Hopefully, we're turning that corner here in the next year or two. And
yeah.
Are you looking forward to that?
Well,
plan for that?
Well, like I said, with our business sort of coming down, we have the facilities. We're ready for that if it happens. I'm afraid it'll be more in the western area where most of that growth takes place, where there is availability of land. We can try to hold ours. And for what the cattle bring today, it's you try to talk to these producers and say, you know, I believe I'd hold on another year or two before I sold. We had a pretty good day, pretty good time to have some cattle. And some it works for, you talk to them, they'll understand. But that one that has the commercial person knocking at his door to give him that $20,000 to $40,000, he's probably going to sell them and move on to something different. But we look forward to it. I think we do things so much different today than we did 50, 60 years ago. And the numbers that we talk about mean something. But because we're so much more efficient, the cattle we raise today are so much more efficient, so much yield better, larger. We sell it by the pound. We don't sell it by the head when we go to the market, to the stores, to the consumer. And our cattle today, where we used to sell animals at 3 years of age that weighed 1,000 pounds, today we sell them at less than 2 years of age and weighing 1,300 to 1,500 pounds. Mm-hmm. So we have changed that footprint, and doesn't take quite as many head as it used to have to get the amount of meat that we get from today. So those are factors that will weigh into this. I think over the past month or so, the average slaughter weights has probably been one of the highest it's ever been. And a few years back, the weights that we were selling at today, they were discounting for because they were too big. All that's changed. So, you know, our industry's changed, and we have to be ready and have to be understand that and progress with it if we're gonna be in it down the road. But I think we do have a bright future as long as we can keep our consumer at a level that he can buy our product, because I think we have a very safe and nutritious product that it's proven that they want.
Well, definitely. Thank you for your insights here today, and we appreciate that. And I might ask you a little bit more here on the initiative. How are you going? You're making conversations here at Cattle Industry Convention. How are the producer profitability initiative, how are you progressing that?
We've working with Grant Group. Grant, they're working with us on our promotion. We're in that initial stages of trying to get out and start these conversations. We would like to hit, you know, different areas will have different ideas of different ways to what would help or what they see would help. You know, we think maybe education on the LRPs, this new insurance. I think that's a tool that we're learning more about. And in the crop side, they've been using the crop insurance for years, and the cattle people are just now sort of getting into this insurance side of the rainfall insurance, the right. Pasture insurance are all things that will, you know, can, if you use them the right way, they can sort of put a floor in that in your operation. And I think education is a big player in that right there. You know, there's probably going to be some ideas that will come out that may be a little against the grain as far as government programs and things like that, that maybe should lean more towards forage production than grain production. CRP is a program that I think probably could have some different ways of using it. I see forage production as going, taken away from, CRP was developed because we had too much land in crop production.
Right.
And so we had to sow it down and pay farmers not to use it. Well, I think that land could be in grass and use it for cattle and still fall in that, you know, conservation, because we do have it sowed back down. It's not being worked and tilled. And I think that would give an opportunity to I think there's some there that could be looked at, and maybe that's a form of payment that you could lease land to a producer wanting to start, or a young person wanting to start, and that be part of that CRP payment rather than having the government have to pay it all. You may get part of it that way, and then I've just sort of had that idea over the years. I think, you know, that land has left us, mm-hmm. and now the only time we get a chance to harvest the hay is if you have a disaster. And usually by that time, its value has gone down so much that it's just filler that you're going out there cutting. And if you were able to use it, it would just give you a more of a level field. And I think if it's money the government wouldn't have to spend, you might put it in an area that you could use a lot better.
You bet.
Okay. There's ideas out there. We just got to get them on the table and get some people talking about them. And I think that's the stage we're in right now.
And LMA can work kind of as a conversation starter and...
At our barns, we see a lot of people that don't go to NCBA, U.S. Cattlemen's, ARCAT. You know, those small producers, I'm sorry, they probably don't make it to these type meetings.
Right.
Their voices don't get heard at these type meetings. They are members or cattle producers, but because of their jobs and diversification, they probably don't make it to a lot of meetings. But they come to our barns, we see them, and we thought it's a good place to maybe start that conversation and just get them to bump some ideas off them that they may have in their other job that might fit back and might would help cattle operations some. So we think we're the first point of contact with some of those that don't make it to these type meetings. And we don't call ourselves a producer group, but we do meet a lot of producers that for the first time, and that we're the ones that they ask the questions to, and we just feel like that gives us a little bit of a reason to be here and be talking about this. We're not trying to take anybody's spot, but we would like to see that conversation start.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today, and we appreciate your time and attention and focus on that. I do think this is a huge issue for the industry, and it's good to get some conversations.
We thank you for your time and for your interest and promoting it, because I think this is how we will make a difference.
Listeners, for more information on making Angus work for you, check out the Angus Beef Bulletin and the Angus Beef Bulletin Extra. You can subscribe to both publications in the show notes. If you have questions or comments, let us know at abbeditorial@angus.org. And we would appreciate it if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with any other profit-minded cattlemen. Thanks for listening. This has been Angus at Work.